Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Tom Jones joins us now from pointer.org. Tom, I wanted to get into you to talk about this Naomi Osaka situation, the Japanese tennis player who basically withdrew from the French Open. She didn't want to participate in the media sessions. They were going to fine her $15,000. Instead, she up and went. She took her racket and went home. And it was sort of surprising that maybe that was her reaction. But then she was disclosed that she really has had anxiety and suffered from some depression since winning the U.S. Open a few years ago. And that she just frankly doesn't enjoy and or want to participate in answering a bunch of questions. And some of that harkens back to her mental condition. You know, she feels like she needs some help in those areas. And listen, we all are for somebody getting as much help as they can. Nobody wants someone to suffer up there, unnecessarily. And so it's certainly her prerogative to do and go and seek whatever treatment or counseling or whatever she needs. And I think everybody would not begrudge any athlete that feels that they're uncomfortable in any situation that they wouldn't withdraw or do what they think they have to do. And she came back. I think initially, Tom, the implication was that maybe the media was, and I don't know the tennis media very well, but maybe it was a little unfair, yeah. Maybe particularly to women or female tennis players. But just there's a lot of layers to unpeel here with this situation. Mm-hmm. But let me just get your initial thought about Osaka withdrawing predominantly because she didn't want to be subjected to press conferences.
Yeah. So I think you hit on something that sort of spun this story out of control. You know, her initial note, which was to tell the French Open officials, like, look, I'm not going to do the press conferences. I don't like doing them. Mm-hmm. And she sort of seemed to indicate that, you know, the media, we go up there and they ask us difficult questions that I don't want to answer. And I don't need them getting in my head. This is a big year for me. And mentally it affects me. And I don't want to have a negative thought in my head. And it almost came off like, I don't like the way the media treats me. And French Open officials said, okay, we're going to fine you $15,000, which we can get into that. I'm not crazy about that idea. But they're trying to get their players to promote the sport and everybody else.
And that happens
else.
In other sports as well. Sure. It happens in football and other.
And remember the famous Marshawn Lynch who
absolutely
said, I'm only here so I don't get fined. And he really mm-hmm. didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And then she came back the next day after she was then threatened with expulsion from not only the French Open but the other Grand Slam, saying, hey, if you don't do our media, you may not be able to play here. And so at this point, she came out and said, okay, I'm just going to walk away. It's a distraction. And here's, by the way, I'm walking away. It all comes down to, as you mentioned, she has a real anxiety, a real fear of public speaking. She's really uncomfortable in such situations. And that's why she decided she didn't want to be a part of it. Then began this discussion, Rick, of press conferences and whether they're really meaningful. And that's the part, Rick, that I'm most fascinated in. As far as the soccer goes, I think we all agree. You said it well. We don't want anybody to be in a position where they're feeling anxious, where they're feeling damaged, where it's unhealthy for them,
yeah,
that it impacts them in such a way that it debilitates them. Like, I think we're all for leagues, media, everybody doing whatever we can to make sure everybody's in a healthy place, mentally, emotionally.
Correct.
However, this idea that I've now seen about press conferences, and it's brought up a question to me, Rick, that I think there's a sense now for among some people that we need to revamp the way press conferences work, that this isn't fair to the athletes, that nothing comes from them, a bunch of mindless questions, a bunch of dumb questions, going over the same stuff over and over and over again, and this sort of feeling that Osaka just basically exposed the idea that press conferences are a waste of time. And Rick, as somebody who's been in like literally 1,000 press conferences, I bet, and you as well, like I think that's wrong. I think to look at it and say the press conference is the issue, I'm not sure is the right way to look at it. I'm all for making sure everybody's okay, and I want Osaka to feel comfortable. But I don't think we need to rip up the press conference because they're unproductive. Because quite frankly, Rick, I think they're very productive, press conferences.
Well, you know, first of all, we come at it from a probably a different viewpoint than most people listening to this podcast, unless you're someone who either is in the media or an athlete or you just happen to watch a lot of them. I guess you could have an opinion. Anyone can have an opinion about them. But, I mean, particularly in an individual sport, right, like tennis, but even in some team sports, you know, we just went through a year where all we had were press conferences, right, where there wasn't sort of availability of these athletes outside of a Zoom call. So in essence, everything was a press conference, right? Even though certain athletes, when the lights or the cameras are on, might not be as willing to share everything as if you were just having a conversation one-on-one and that sort of thing. In an individual sport, I mean, when are you going to have access, right? Like, it's almost, you know, whatever you just witnessed, whatever performance it was, or in terms of, like, advancing the performance that's coming up, how else are you supposed to get this information? Obviously, there's a lot of promotional value to it for the tour or for any sport, whether it's the NFL or Major League Baseball. Generating interest is what generates customers, which is what generates salaries, which is what you're playing for. You're a professional, you know. When you made a decision to leave the amateur ranks, then it's all about money, and there's a certain expectation that you're going to promote the sport. And the way you do that is by going up there and answering questions and sharing, you know, part of your being, part of your, you know, now, you know, it's up to you ultimately how you answer or how much you allow a reporter or your fans in general to get an inside glimpse of you or your psyche or whatever. But that's always been, for as long as I can remember, part of sport, right? Part of performance for that matter. And I believe me, it's like any other profession. You have some that are very good at asking the right questions or soliciting good information or reaction or emotion based on how they do their jobs. And then you have some that aren't very good at it, you know, and I can't question everybody's motive that's got a microphone in their hand asking an athlete something, but I do know how useful they've been because I've been in the arena. You've been in the arena. Like, you know, you can probably cite examples of how, you know, some of the better stories or the better information have come from these press conferences.
Absolutely. Look, I understand that the press conferences aren't ideal. Look, if it was up to me, I'd have one-on-ones with Bruce Arians after Bucks games. It would just be
absolutely
me.
I don't need anybody. I don't need him to call anybody.
Right.
And in fact, I'm fairly confident that I can get better information than everybody else that's on there. I mean, sounds arrogant.
Don't even count the Zoom calls. Let's talk
the press conference.
Pretend we go back to and that's the other thing. Like, press conferences, they are necessary. It's even pre-COVID that the Bucks play a game and there's however many 30 outlets covering the game, 35. There's not time to do one-on-one interviews. Everybody needs to.
That's right.
And it's not an ideal situation. I'm working on one story. Like, you and I worked at the same paper. I was doing a column on one thing. You're doing a column on something else.
Right.
Like, we're all trying to jam our questions in here.
Mm-hmm.
So the press conference is the only way to do it. Now, during the week, if you have a chance to get somebody one-on-one, great. But and for tennis, there are no one-on-ones unless you work for the New York Times or, you know,
you get some exclusive.
ESPN or whatever, and you get some exclusive. But other than that, you're getting the same. Everybody's getting the same information at this press conference. They're not ideal. There are bad questions. There are very bad reporters who ask dumb questions. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, the majority of reporters ask good questions, and most of the athletes are okay with it and answer the questions. Here, Rick, I think it's also a question of fairness too. I don't know how many times that you and I have been in the press box, and we say, "Why would you throw the ball on that down? Why would you not take time off the clock. Well, press conference is what the chance to ask Dirk Cutter or Greg Schiano or Lovie Smith or Bruce Arians. Why? Why did you do that there? And you know what? You know how many times that I've gone in with an idea of like, that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And somebody come back and tell me, no, here's why we did it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, not only that, and you talk about fairness, right, which is part of this conversation, you know, that maybe certain athletes feel that the questions aren't fair or that reporters aren't being fair or that they're looking for something that's going to put them in a bad light. Sometimes, and very often, it's just the opposite. You ask these questions because you might assume something that isn't true. Hey, this quarterback made a horrific throw. Like, this lost the game. This quarterback threw the interception. The game was – and then you come to find out, no, it wasn't all on him. You know what I mean? Like, this guy blew an assignment. This guy ran the wrong route. This thing happened, and therefore that happened. So, in the interest of fairness, you're asking these questions to try to get what the real answer is, if they'll give it to you. And most of the time they will. Most of the time they'll share critical elements about game-changing plays or points or what have you. And that is part of the job. It's giving the reader something that even though they watch the game, they have lots of questions about it, right? Because you don't know what play was called. You don't know who might have gone the wrong way on a certain play, or for that matter, who actually made the play, even if it resulted in an interception. Maybe somebody else did something that forced it. So, you know, all those things are an attempt to be fair, an attempt to be give some contextual, aspect to their performance. And I think a lot of times it can serve the athlete and does, you know, it certainly serves the reader.
Absolutely. And I also think too, Rick, that a lot of times we see these controversial moments in press conferences, like, oh, did you see LeBron went off on a reporter or Serena went off on a reporter? These are the viral moments that happen rarely, but when they do happen, everybody sees them. Most press conferences are pretty nondescript, to be honest with you. Like, everybody gets the quotes they need for their story. You and I used to sit in one practically every day over at One Buck Place.
Yeah, we did.
And most of the time, everybody got what they needed, but there were no moments that were going to lead NFL Network. There was rarely were there moments like that's going to be on Pro Football Talk, like in 10 minutes, you know.
No, but there were, you know what, very often, not all the time, but very often, whether it's the athlete or the coach, they'll go in there knowing that this access is going to help them deliver a message or deflect something. In other words, they come in sometimes with their own agendas. Like, they make use of this for their own purposes. And, you know, some of the greatest in the world, you know, that we see on beer commercials, right, were actually premeditated. You know, they were coaches that went in there, you know, bent on saying something, bent on leaving an impression about a performance or a game or a decision. And, you know, they sometimes become iconic. I mean, Herm Edwards was asked, at a certain point of the season, about kicking a field goal or, you know, that sort of thing by Judy Baptista, which is the famous, you play to win the game. Hello, you play to win the game. And, you know, Herm Edwards had every intention, I think, I think he knew the question was coming. I think he was armed for it. I don't think he rehearsed it. It was hysterical, right?
Right.
What about Allen Iverson being asked about practice? Like, people would have initially thought that's the dumbest question. But here's a guy who wasn't practicing, who went out there and didn't care. And Larry Brown or whoever it was made a big deal about it, right?
Right.
And they asked Allen Iverson, and it led to a funny moment, but one that was actually added some perspective. Like, yeah, you're right. What are we talking about? I went, man, we're talking about practice, not the game I love, not the game. What are we talking about, man? We're talking about practice?
I watch it about once a week. I do.
I'm telling you, it's still the funniest thing in the world, just the way he says it. And everybody gets it after a while.
How about this? Playoffs?
Playoffs? I'm just trying to win a game. Playoffs. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, there's a million of those, right? I mean, I can remember covering Greg Schiano, and they were They were two of the longest years of my life. They were in New York, and it was early in his NFL career, short as it was. And they went and they played the New York Giants and the New York Football Giants. And they, why do they say that, by the way? Not to be confused with the,
yeah, there hasn't been a baseball
team Giants.
In New York in,
I mean, San Francisco's out there, yeah. So they're playing the Football Giants, and it's Tom Coughlin is coaching the Giants, and Eli Manning is the quarterback. And the Bucs were up in this game like 21 points, but for whatever reason, Schiano just decides to continue blitzing, and so Manning goes, okay, I'll keep throwing the ball down the field one-on-one with my outside receivers, and he proceeds to just bomb them and come back and win the game. And so they win the game, and but right before the game is over, they're, you know, the Giants are in victory formation. Now, this is maybe game two.
I think it was the second game of the year.
The Schiano
sure.
era, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
And so Schiano had this thing where he wanted his players, even though they're taking a knee, victory formation, hey, I want our guys to fire off the line of scrimmage and try to get that ball. Like, wait, what?
Because it was still a one-score game.
Because, well, they don't get to decide the game is over just because, you know, they have the ball and you know, they still have to run clock. But, like, when they snap that ball, we're going to fire across that line. And there's a certain decorum, rightly or wrongly, in the NFL that's existed for probably too many years, but it does exist. And that is, you know, when all you have to do is take a knee, you basically let them snap the ball. They take the knee. Mathematically, you can't get it back. You're out of timeouts, whatever. And you recognize that the game is over and you go away. Well, that was not what Schiano wanted from his players. So he did get enough of them to do exactly that, and they damn near killed Eli Manning because he was totally unexpected for it. Well, Schiano's point was, yeah, well, we would do that at Rutgers, and you know, and we've gotten the ball back. It's actually worked. So they go into the game is over, and of course the Giants are going crazy on the sideline. Coughlin's going nuts because he had never seen this before in the NFL. And they go to the handshake at midfield, and Coughlin has his finger in Schiano's face like he is hot, right? His face was as red as it was during that playoff game in Green Bay when it was melting. And so we go to the locker room and go to the post-game press conference, and you had to ask Greg, like, you know, what was that? And he made the fatalistic mistake of saying, well, I guess that they didn't watch much Rutgers tape. It's like, wait a minute, what? you're in an NFL game and you're talking about what you did at Rutgers? But he was right and he was wrong. It wasn't a good soundbite. But, you know, he went on to explain, you know, this is what we did. This is what we do. We're going to continue doing it. And it became a thing with veteran players like Ronnie Barber. They had wanted no part of it. And so there already was a bit of a schism developing among the veteran players who thought that this was completely Bush League, you know, that this is not what you do in the NFL. And, you know, Schiano talked about it that day. He talked about it on that Monday. He says, I'm not talking about it the rest of the year. I'm done talking about it. And then he went on every NFL show for the rest of the week to talk about it. And some people thought, you know, this is a great idea. What, he's right. Why should the other team decide when the game is over? And most of them said, you can't really do this. Eventually it ceased, but not right away. My point of all of this is, until you got his perspective in that press conference, until you reacted to literally what was happening on the final kneel down of the play and the handshake that didn't occur at midfield with Coughlin's finger in his face, that became a big story for not just that week, but for weeks forward. And I just wonder, like, where would you have been, you know, if nobody shows up? Well, you saw the game. You know what I mean? Like, why did he do it? What was going on? What was the reaction? So, again,
tell you what, Rick, I've written a lot of columns in my life, and the only time I've really gotten pushback from an athlete or a coach,
right,
or a general manager was when I've written something and they say to me, why didn't you ask me about that?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And it's true. A lot of people talk about the column that I wrote about Jameis going to the school. Remember, you went to the school and he told girls, you know, girls
told
are supposed
the girls
to be silent.
Be demure and, yeah.
And, you know, and it, you know, people all over town talked about that, and blogs were written and stories were written, and I took a lot of heat from it. You know, there's only one person in town who asked Jameis Winston, tell me what happened and tell me why you said what you said. And that was me. I asked Jameis that day before I wrote the column.
Yeah.
And while he may not have liked the column, I do know for a fact that he appreciated the chance to give his answer, which is
sure.
why, you know, and he told me his explanation to me was, well, there was a kid and he was acting up and I was trying to get his attention, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But at least I had his perspective in there. But look, Rick, the whole point of these press conferences, I get it. There are some people who don't like doing it, who have a real anxiety. We've seen Marshawn Lynch apparently doesn't like doing them. Zach Greinke, I think at one point had a real issue, mm-hmm. like a real phobia. Like this was like, he was almost paralyzed physically from doing these things.
Yeah.
You know, Osaka has, I totally believe her when she says that she has issues dealing and she doesn't like it. And she feels like it really harms her and she spends too much time worrying about it.
And you can feel that, by the way. That's palatable. I mean, if you watch,
has anybody ever public spoken before? If you don't like it, that's one of the biggest fears there are for people. Like most people listen to this podcast. If I told you, you got to get up and talk in front of 500 people tomorrow at work or whatever,
right.
You'd be like, oh my God, or read it. Or I'm going to ask you to read a page in a book. You would be nervous.
Well,
I mean,
I'll tell you, in this job, I still have anxiety about certain things that I've had to do. You know, it is not an easy thing to do when you're having to ask uncomfortable questions, questions that you know that people aren't going to, they're going to take exception to the topic, or, you know, they're going to think it's a gotcha or what have you. Or if you're on national TV for the first time, or if you're, you know, we've all, even in the media, have experienced our own level of anxiety.
And Osaka in this particular case, she's 23 years old.
Yeah, she's a kid.
She's a kid who plays tennis for a living. I totally understand.
Right. She's not a public speaker or a politician or something
I totally understand where she's coming from. And, yep. Rick, there's another area here that needs to be discussed. Maybe not by us, but I mean by sports leagues. Like women... Yep. How are women treated by the media? How are women of color treated by the media? These are real issues. I mean, these are questions that I understand.
They need to be discussed, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I do think the answer is let's find her or kick her out of the tournament. The answer is let's figure out a way to make this work for everybody. And I saw a solution tonight I'll throw at you in a minute.
Yeah.
But the point that I really wanted to make, Rick, besides, yes, I believe Osaka and I believe that there may be, changes need to be made to help people who aren't comfortable in those situations. But at the same time, let's just not get rid of press conferences because of this. You know, I do think they're still valuable. And I hate to be the one, Rick, because, look, I used to write about, you know, NFL quarterbacks, even though I never played as an NFL quarterback. I don't think you need to have played the game to understand the game.
Let me read you this quote. Now, I'm glad you brought that up.
Let me just real quick say, and I don't mean to say if you haven't been in the position of a sports writer, you don't know, but I'm just telling you, as a sport, you can believe what you want, but I'm just telling you, as a sports writer, I'm telling you, press conferences are valuable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's take it or leave it. That's good perspective. Here's what Venus Williams had to say about how she dealt with these sort of press conferences. And let me think, and this is hitting a little bit on what you just said. She said, for me personally, how I cope, how I deal with it, was that I know every single person asking me a question can't play as well as I can and never will. So no matter what you say or what you write, you'll never light a candle to me. That's how I deal with it. But each person deals with it differently.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. And that's fine. That's fine. If that's the approach she wants to take, okay, she can
do
whatever she wants. Yeah. My thing has always been, when people have talked to me about, well, why should you talk? You don't know what it's like to hit a Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. But you know what? When I'm writing about Evan Longoria, I'm not comparing Evan Longoria to me.
Right.
I'm comparing Evan Longoria to every other player in baseball.
There you go.
When I'm talking about Jameis Winston playing quarterback, I don't compare him to me.
Right.
I compare him to Tom Brady. I compare him to Alex Smith, whoever. And I also don't need to be a chef to tell you that, like, that steak you just brought stinks. Like, well, it didn't taste
good. I don't know how they make movies. I've been around the sets when they do it. I'm not exactly sure all the process of editing and
you've never written
scores,
one. You've never directed written, one.
Never
right?
written a screenplay. Never directed one. Been on the set of one. It was Cop and a Half with Burt Reynolds, which I can tell you about in a minute. Whew. I mean, this. We spent all day shooting one scene, and it didn't make the cut. And I mean, I was there all day. Sam Weitz threw a punch in a bar. I'll tell you about it. But it was Burt Reynolds. And the whole thing is that I don't know how movies are made. I guarantee you I can tell you when I see a bad one or a good one.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, The Godfather, good movie. Yeah. Don't have a clue how they made it.
Caddyshack 2? No. No. Mm-mm. Didn't work.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm saying about this.
That's all we're doing. Yeah.
If you don't, as I saw a lot of people who don't cover sports, who said sports press conferences are useless. If you want to feel that way, that's fine. Yeah. I'm just telling you, they're not. They're not useless. I think they are valuable. I do think they have meaning. Now, here's the idea, Rick. You and I'm going to steal your idea because I don't know if you were going to say it, but you had one thought about the number of people who are credentialed. Like, there are some people who, quite frankly...
Yeah, and
let me also say real quick, mm-hmm. tennis media, I've never covered tennis, except for a tournament here years ago, and it was a very small tournament. And
was it the Virginia Slims?
Yeah, it was like something. It was like the Eckerd Open. Remember the old Eckerd Open? And Carling Bassett was in it.
Carling Bassett.
And I covered her, and her dad had... I think her dad had recently passed away, and I did a one-on-one story. You know. But as far as... you know, this, you know, tennis media, I think tennis media is a different animal mm-hmm. in terms of like, you know, how they.
Well, it's international. It's international to begin with, right?
Yeah,
so, I mean,
it's
more.
Very confrontational at times and just weird sometimes. Not everybody, but again, I look at the press conferences that we used to be a part of, and I look around and I'm like, man, somebody's yo-hoos. Like, no wonder coaches look at us and like, real, like, I got to explain myself to you guys. And I mean, I'm sure Dirk Cutter felt that way about me. Like, I'm seriously going to explain our offense to you. Like, you're going to get it. I understand the resentment or the bitterness that some coaches are going to have over this, because I'm sitting there writing whether he's doing a good job or not. And he's looking at me like, you don't have the first clue of what we do. I get all of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Rick, I do think, if you limit the number of people who get in, and that was one of the suggestions, Rick, what if you start having pools and only rotate them? Okay. After a game, we're going to have four people go in and ask the questions. Mm. I don't know. What do you think? I mean,
no, I don't like that.
I cut you off from what else you were going to say. There.
No, I don't like that. I mean, I think, I do think there's a way, however, to make the standards a little higher. And my point to that is, look, we in journalism, and particularly in sports journalism, or maybe just life in general, we have blurred the lines, right, so much between, you know, anyone can do it, anyone can have a .com, anyone can have a blog, right, and say they cover this or that, but who are you doing it for? Is it your own website? Is it a website that someone just created 5 minutes ago that doesn't have very many followers, or maybe they do have followers? What's your training? You know what I mean? And I'm not suggesting that you have to, you know, have a degree in journalism to practice that profession, because a lot of people don't, and, you know, whatever. That's fine. But there should be a modicum of, whether it's communication law and ethics, or just, I don't know, just some decorum where, you know, you just don't credential everybody if you're in a sports league or a team. Because I do believe that whether it's athletes, coaches, whatever, they what I call the LCD, the least common denominator, they look at whoever's at the bottom of the food chain, they generalize that we're all that person. You know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. I believe that. Some can discern the difference. I'm not saying they can't. But I think too often we kind of get lumped into the group of, geez, look at this room.
Yeah. No,
you know,
there's no doubt
about it. And there are bad, there are people like any profession that are better at their jobs than others. And that's not breaking news, right? You know, if you're the best heart doctor or heart surgeon in the world, well, you're probably working for the best hospital and saving the most lives, you know? By the same token, you know, they still call the guy last in his class an attorney, you know, or a doctor. Yeah, right.
Depending There's on, a worse on, doctor in the world somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Somebody's at the bottom because they keep track. And so,
well, look, Rick, look, I don't claim to have asked a perfect question every time I've been. I've asked bad questions and I've written bad columns. And I've
absolutely.
Written, and I'm sure, you know, just as, you know, athletes have lost games and matches and
right. We're all human. We all right. screw up. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't want to. I don't know. I don't. I guess I'm sort of walking both sides of the fence here, Rick. I understand where Naomi Osaka is coming from. I hope that the sports, the women's tour and the Grand Slams work with her on trying to make it a better experience for her, because the last thing we need is for her not to talk to the media, to not mm-hmm. to be public. She's one of the most popular players on the tour. The tour
would she, be popular? And, you know, what is that line between promotion, tour promotion, her own brand? Is it enough just to pick up a tennis racket and beat the brains out of everybody out there and just let them admire your talent, whether they know the first thing about
you? That's the heart of also the heart of this whole question, Rick, is what do athletes, quote unquote, owe us? Mm-hmm. And when I say us, I mean not only just media, but the public. Some people feel like all they owe us is their performance. They go out on mm-hmm. the court, they play. I just to play devil's advocate here, I could say, okay, fine, go off. We won't televise them. Mm-hmm. We won't talk to you. We won't write about you. We won't put you on TV.
Right.
You go off and do your own thing. And mm-hmm. and then at night, you go to your other job where you actually make money. But seriously, because if nobody
in other
covered,
words, you chose to be in a profession that has a reasonable expectation, you're going to be interviewed. You're going
to
be.
You don't have to be funny. You don't have to be entertaining. You don't have to be particularly insightful. But I do think you need to be available. I do think it's part of your job to help promote the sport.
And I
know people disagree with it. And if you do, I get where you're. I understand where you're coming from. And if I'm an athlete. Yeah, I would. Rick, I used to feel bad when I covered the light when I was a columnist, and even before that, Stephen Stamkos is expected to talk every day, and I got to a point where like I'd leave and listen to some of the questions I was like, what are we going to talk about Stephen Stamkos today? But he was the captain, and he was always there, and people always asked for him, and it was people who weren't around the team every day that was the easy guy to talk to because he's good to talk to.
Yeah.
But I understood where it's like there were some days where you're like, why do I need to do this? But he did it because he sort of got it. Like, okay, mm-hmm. this is what I have to do. We're trying to sell tickets. So, you know, that's part of what my role here. I know some people don't feel that way, but I do think athletes have some obligation to help promote the sport.
Well, again, this all started because Naomi has a problem with anxiety. She's had problems, struggle with depression. I think if you read her last letter that she wrote that was been published on social media, it explains with a little more detail about, you know, what her aim intended to be, and that she didn't want to be a distraction, and she didn't.
And I
mean
thought
to.
They handled it poorly, Rick. The French Open and
I
tennis.
Do too.
Handled,
I
mean,
do too.
Because they originally said we're going to fine you, and then it got to the point.
No, now you're out. You know, like she's withdrawing. You should have never gotten to a point where she felt like she had to withdraw.
No, I don't even think they should have got to the point where they were fining her. But I mean, it also got to a point. I mean, she had. There's no delicate way to. Say it, but I think everybody knows what I'm talking to. When you have enough money, that there's a phrase that when you have enough money, you don't really care what people do to you or say to you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was. It's like, we're going to fine you $15,000. And she's like, hold on, let me get my purse.
That's right.
Like,
exactly.
I have it. I have the cash. Okay.
Hold my beer. I'm good for it.
Hold my beer. Let me get my bag. Yeah. Here's the $15,000. I got it. I'm good for it. You know, right. And we can do this every day. Because I have enough money to do that, you know. And that's when the tournament's like, well, now we got to do something else. They needed to work with her, and hopefully they will work with her to help not just her, but any other athletes who feel uncomfortable in those settings.
Yeah. And in a team sports setting, like there's been issues where, you know, there's very capable guys that can do good interviews that have decided for their own reasons, maybe they didn't play well, maybe they just didn't like talking, but we've had players tell us not today, right? Like not today. And then you go to Sunday or you go to a game and the player, you come up to him, say there's a key player or whatever. And you go, hey, can I ask you about, no, not today, fellas. Like Well, if not today, since it's game day, then when? Like, when would this ever be a conversation? So, you know, I mean, I understand, you know, sort of the pause that they take sometimes about whether they want to get up there and answer certain questions, and they know what's coming, and maybe it isn't always positive. But, yeah, this one, I would agree with your first premise, which is you may not understand this. You'll have to trust us a little bit. I had somebody say to me, well, you guys did Zoom calls, for example. Like, this kind of got back to the whole why does the locker room need to be open, which I'm a staunch, you know, I have a very firm belief that if we're going to have vaccinated players and vaccinated reporters, and we're putting the vaccinated players with everyone else, including on the road, to dinner and all that other stuff,
restrictions, right?
They should reopen the locker rooms and allow us. And somebody made the point, they go, well, I've read all your stories this past year, and I thought the Zoom calls, it worked out just fine. I couldn't tell any difference. And all I would say about that is, okay, well, yay me, okay, that I was able to find other means of getting information, whether it was using past relationships or whatnot, and been creative. But what we don't know is how many great stories did I not have an opportunity to find out about? Because we'll never know, you know, and that's the thing. Like, you take away that sort of access, we don't know what we don't know. Because those relationships weren't made. Look, there's a whole rookie class, a whole team that won a Super Bowl. Many of those players I've never even met, mm-hmm. you know, to this day. And so it's hard to imagine trying to bring readers or fans sort of behind the ropes with you. I mean, we have a job that is privileged. We're able to go to places and have access to the athletes that, and you know this, Tom, you've been into enough parties and enough, have enough friends that ask you, you know, what's it like? Who's so-and-so like, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. And we have that ability and that privilege. All we want to do is share that with people, you know, because we are behind the ropes. And so you sort of want to be able to bring that to them, that experience that only you have in terms of access. So you take the access away, the reader doesn't get to come with you. So hopefully they figured it out. We haven't solved all the world's problems, but I had this one guy say, he goes, you know, I've listened to you talk about this thing like 3 or 4 times. I still don't believe, you still haven't convinced me. Like, okay, well, you know, maybe I never will.
And you might never, Rick. And that's the point that I'm trying to make is that, and like I said, I almost hesitate to say this because I don't like it when athletes say it to me, like, you don't understand.
Right. Exactly.
You may not believe us, but but I'm just telling you, our job depends on access to players and athletes. And the more access we have in the limited, I'm all for one-on-ones. Let's do one-on-ones. Let's do that all day.
Absolutely.
But there are some moments where it's unavoidable. You have to have mass press conferences.
Right.
Because of deadlines, because of...
Well, and otherwise, I mean, you talk about an imposition. I mean, how would you like to have an athlete have to stand there and do 25 one-on-ones?
I've been in that Lightning locker room and the way it's worked, it used to be back when I covered the team back in the 90s, when the team was bad, it was like two of us, you know?
Yeah,
and you could just get the locker room, okay, locker room's open, and you get whoever you want. It's turned into now, like, okay, here are the three players who are going to be available: Victor Hedman, Steven Stamkos, and Alex Killorn.
And that's it.
And they go one at a time. It's Steven Stamkos now available, and like, whew, massive, you know, crowd scrum gets running. And I could at that point, if I wanted to, go to Alex Killorn, conceivably, and talk to him. Mm-hmm. But I know what Alex Killorn is going to say. Like, can we just wait? Because I don't want to have to answer this question.
I'll do this twice. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, you know, those have basically turned into press conferences as well. I would prefer to talk to Alex Killorn one-on-one, but I get it from, and that's where we bend a little bit and say, okay, I'm only going to make you do it once, even though the quote I'm getting is also the quote that ESPN's getting and the quote that
that's right,
the radio, you know, 620's getting, and, you know, everybody in town's going to get.
Yeah, and everyone benefits sort of from your own questions and whatnot. Anyway, it's a good topic. It's something that was organic, that was raised with this issue with Naomi Osaka, and I just think that it's worth your insights because you've been in the business a long time. I have. I don't think people necessarily, you know, my whole thing is, you don't always need to know how the sausage is made. You know, just enjoy the meal. You know what I mean? Like, just trust us on this.
And we're trying to, I would love to work with athletes that, to make them happy as well. And look, here's the bottom line. This is the way I've always felt about it. You could always pull a Belichick and just get up here and say nothing if you want. You know?
Yeah, if you have to. Yeah. Or you can take my phone number and call me whenever you feel comfortable after you've had a little time to think about it and maybe a beer or two. You know, I'm open for business. I'm perfectly fine with that. So long as you call me first. All right. So what do we got going on at thenewsletterpointer.org?
That's it. But that
did you write about this topic?
Yeah, this topic. I've three days in a row I wrote about it this week. It's been really
good.
It's a bit of fat. And it is, what's interesting, Rick, is the opinions all over the map. Sports writers are divided on this, which is interesting.
It's fascinating to me that that's the case. Are they divided on gender lines? I'm curious.
Gender line. I think there are some people who are more sympathetic to, or at least more, I should maybe not, like just more maybe
empathetic
to, hey, what are athletes of color going through? What are women going through on this topic?
And I think I think it's a worthy discussion. Yeah, yes. I do. I think there is a legitimate question about all of that.
And are women athletes treated differently than male athletes? They may be. And same thing with athletes of color, particularly women athletes of color.
Those are all conversations we should have and should give serious consideration to, because that adds to the whole, you know, reservations from athletes to want to participate. So, yeah, we should definitely do that. Well, check it out in the newsletter on pointer.org. Tom Jones, my former radio partner, longtime columnist you've read in the Tampa Bay Times, joins us a couple times each week. Appreciate it, Tommy.
All right. Talk to you next week, Rick.
All right. For Steve Versnick, I am Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.